James Madison, the fourth president of the United States, was born on March 16, 1751, 250 years ago. Perhaps none of America's founding fathers contributed in more and various concrete ways to the creation of the Republic and the development of its political system. Here to discuss Madison's significance is Lance Banning, professor of history at the University of Kentucky and the author of The Sacred Fire of Liberty, James Madison and the Founding of the Federal Republic. Welcome, Professor Banning.
Thank you.
You've written that that Madison was preeminent among the men who shaped, explained, and won approval of the U.S. Constitution. Let's take that step by step. First of all, what was Madison's role in the writing of the U.S. Constitution?
Okay, let's take it step by step. First, in the fall of 1786, Madison and about a dozen other people gathered in Annapolis, Maryland, for a convention that was supposed to consider the country's commercial problems. And basically, the convention was a failure. Not enough people showed up to make any impact. And the members who were present recommended that a full-fledged constitutional convention be formed. That is, that a course of extra-legal action be undertaken to address the country's problems. There was no provision for a constitutional convention under the old Articles of Confederation. From that point forward, Madison committed himself entirely to that idea. He led Virginia, which was the largest, oldest, and most influential state, toward making that convention a success, and Virginia led the other states. Madison then, in a sense, sat down in his study and diagnosed the problems of the present Confederation government to a depth that nobody else had done. And came up with a plan that he thought would address those problems. That plan, the Virginia delegates got together just before the whole Constitutional Convention met and worked on that a bit and then presented it immediately to the convention. And that plan, although it underwent a whole lot of change, the Constitutional Convention lasted 4 months and changed a lot of things. That plan was the basis for the discussions, and Madison, in many ways, was the most influential discussant through those 4 months at the convention. So he's absolutely critical to begin with in creating the Constitution. And then when the Constitutional Convention ends, he goes back to New York, where he was a member of the Confederation Congress, and joined with Alexander Hamilton in writing the Federalist Papers, which are still the classic commentary on the Constitution. Enormously influential with the courts, as well as for general understanding. Mm-hmm. And then, having finished that, he went back to Virginia, where he led the Federalists in a very narrowly divided, really a state ratifying convention was so narrowly divided that nobody knew how it would come out, and secured ratification there. So he's absolutely, in many ways, the most critical figure in the creation and then the ratification of the Constitution.
And yet there are some ironies here. You note in The Sacred Fire of Liberty that despite his role in writing the Constitution, his role in, along with Hamilton, supporting it and explaining it, it later became something about which he had concerns, that you write, if he had known exactly how Hamilton and others would interpret the Constitution, Madison himself might not have signed it.
Yeah, fundamentally, he and Hamilton, in many ways, are the key figures in this, and they cooperated so closely in bringing the Constitution about and then in writing the Federalist Papers and that kind of thing. But the fact is that the two men wanted a stronger central government for not just different but almost conflicting reasons. And once the new government went into effect and Hamilton was in a position as Secretary of the Treasury, which was really the key administrative office at that time, Once Hamilton was in position to try to put his ideas into effect, then Madison very quickly became the leader of the opposition to Hamilton's plans.
There's nothing in the Constitution that contemplates political parties at all. In fact, Madison and Jefferson and most of the other founders actually feared factions. One of the points of the 10th Federalist is that the new republic will stifle factions. And yet political parties arise anyway, as you mentioned. What's Hamilton's role in that? And once the party opposition develops, what's his view of what's come about?
Well, I guess you could put it this way, that none of these men, even while they were in hindsight creating political parties, none of them saw themselves as doing this. They saw themselves associating with other patriots to secure the right kind of policies and ultimately the right kind of future for the United States. Hamilton had a very elaborate plan, so elaborate that we won't really have time to talk about it in full, but a very elaborate plan for turning the United States into a great imperial republic, the sort of nation that would be able to compete with the great empires of the time, France and England, more or less on their own terms. He took England as a model, an economic and financial model for what the United States should be like, and laid down a plan, a set of policies designed to achieve that. And that's what he had wanted a new constitution for to begin with. Madison, on the other hand, really had wanted the Constitution so that the United States could escape having a future like the European states. So very quickly, Madison began opposing Hamilton's plan, and in large part carrying Jefferson along with him, and gathering additional followers to the point where eventually they had what we would recognize as a political party, and Hamilton had his own. But nobody anticipated that, and they didn't even think of themselves early on as, operating as a party, but rather just as, a collection of patriots determined to secure the right kind of future.
When we know how it turned out, clearly Madison and Hamilton end up on other sides of the fence here, the partisan division. The last part of The Sacred Fire of Liberty finds you discussing the identities of the authors of the Federalist Papers. Looking back at the Federalist Papers now, what are some of the splits that become apparent in the thinking of Madison and Hamilton in those attempts to explain the Constitution?
Well, Madison's concept of a central government was still a concept that was friendly to states' rights. Certainly he wanted the national government to be supreme within its proper sphere, but he had in mind a large preserve of areas into which the national government would not go. He believed that the Constitutional Convention had created a partly national but also partly federal form of government, that it had delegated specific powers to that government and no other powers. Hamilton, by contrast, was willing to push as far as he could reasonably push, as far as he could get away with pushing, in the direction of national supremacy. Madison ultimately believes that that's a danger to American liberty. It's a danger to the kind of country that America needs to be if it's going to sustain a free and republican government.
Liberty is one of those words that Americans use all the time. But of course, it can mean lots of different things. What was Madison's understanding of the word?
Well, Madison really is pretty characteristic of the revolutionary generation, or the founding generation, we might say, in that he uses that word repeatedly in two distinguishable ways. He means by it, of course, that individuals have inherent God-given rights that it is no business of government to interfere on, that legitimate governments cannot enter into those preserves of individual liberty. Religious freedom is a good example, is a key example for Madison. But he also uses the word liberty. In fact, if you carefully read the Federalist Papers, you find him using the word liberty most often there to mean self-government. That is a form of government which is based entirely on the consent of the people through elections. It has no kings, no aristocrats, no dictators or anything like that. Every officer of that government is elected, either directly or sometimes at one remove. For example, that, you know, it's the president with the consent of the Senate that appoints judges, for example. But every officer in that government depends ultimately on popular election. And, you know, the people's direction of their own affairs through an elective government is the other thing that he means by liberty. And in a way, I suppose, a great challenge for Madison and maybe for that entire generation was to answer the question whether it was possible to combine liberty defined in those two different ways. Could you have a government in which the majority would rule, and yet at the same time, a government in which individual rights and minority rights would be carefully protected?
Where does slavery fit into all of this? Was he much inconvenienced by that issue, intellectually or otherwise?
Well, he's much disturbed by it. I mean, like Jefferson, like many of the Virginians of that period, and even though he was a slaveholder himself, he believed that slavery was absolutely incompatible with American ideas. He was not a very active leader in anti-slavery things. He did take some actions against it, but they're limited actions. Like Jefferson, he's trapped in a situation that he was not able to see a way out of. Jefferson and Madison both believe that because of the legacy of slavery, it was never going to be possible for blacks and whites to live together peacefully as equals. So that both of them, for example, were proponents of colonization schemes. And late in his life, Madison was a president of the American Colonization Society.
And this is the organization that sent 12,000 or so former slaves to Liberia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It strikes me that there's something of an irony here with Madison. He is so important in so many concrete ways, an advocate of religious liberty, one of the authors, perhaps the chief author of the Constitution, an author of the Federalist Papers, a president, and so on.
And principle free, he is the framer of the Bill of Rights.
Yes, that's right, the first 10 amendments. And yet, his face is not on Mount Rushmore. He has no monument, unless we count the Capitol building in Washington, to match Washington's or Lincoln's. Why is that? What's his presence in the public mind?
Well, I think you're right about that. It's a riddle. I mean, to the degree where I would be willing to say that Madison is probably the greatest American, the most important American public figure, to whom we don't have a suitable monument. And there, I guess there are several different directions that you could start along to answer that question. There was nothing really charismatic about James Madison. He was a careful, hard-working, deep-thinking politician and thinker. But there's nothing really charismatic about him. He's not like Washington, the great hero who led the United States through the War for Independence. He's not even like Jefferson, one of the greatest prose stylists who ever wrote in the English language, and was able to stir people so deeply with his words. Madison was a very fine writer, but he's not the great wordsmith that Jefferson is.
And a much more subtle writer, I would think, than Jefferson, too, which could that account for part of the difference as well?
Well, yeah, most people would agree with that. Jefferson, in many ways, is basically the great celebrator of the American people. And Madison is a much more careful thinker than that. He's ultimately as good a Republican as Jefferson is, but he's aware that the people can make mistakes and can indeed even endanger minority rights and things like that. So he tends to think things through to a depth that Jefferson didn't, to a depth maybe that no one else ever did. I think you could probably get a pretty general agreement among scholars that there probably never has been a finer political and constitutional thinker in our country's history. But this is not the kind of thing that that tends to stir the mass imagination. He's not a charismatic figure. He did not have a great presidency as Jefferson did or Washington. I guess it's part. You could say that maybe part of the answer is the weaknesses of our educational system. we don't educate people sufficiently about history and historical figures.
Well, as a history
part
teacher,
of the problem is just the nature of Madison's career and his personality. He was not a stirring, charismatic sort of figure.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Banning, for helping educate the rest of us in Madison's importance.
Well, you're certainly welcome. I enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Lance Banning, author of The Sacred Fire of Liberty, James Madison and the Founding of the Federal Republic.